Hey everyone, you can now hear How Did I Get Here while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. On-demand news, talk, and more on your mobile phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, and no memory or storage wasted. Available for your iPhone, Android phone, WebOS phones, or your BlackBerry. Downloading is easy. Just go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Right. Hey, everyone. It's me, Johnny, kind of fighting a cold right now as I did this huge trip this week on Saturday. Let's see, it's Friday now, but on Saturday, I went to Dallas and played a gig, and I woke up on Sunday morning pretty early, and I left Dallas and drove all the way to Bowling Green, Kentucky. I got there just in time for to order some pizza and watch the Grammys in a hotel room and live tweet with my cousin Eric. If you are on Twitter and you like people with six sense of humor, you can follow me at Johnny Gowdy, because I'm going to be live tweeting the Oscars with my cousin Eric. He's at Eric Rudolphy on Twitter. Anyway, so I did that. The next morning I woke up and drove to Youngstown, Ohio, bright and early. So it was about 20 hours of driving over those 2 days. Then I went to Cleveland with my girlfriend for Valentine's Day, and I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the first time, and I don't think I even have enough time to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I felt a lot of things about it, and I had a great time with my girlfriend Jessie there, and also I thought it was very cool that I have the kind of girlfriend that wants to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on Valentine's Day, so I'm lucky. And anyway, then on the 15th, then I flew back at night. And got up yesterday, and caught up on some stuff. And then AJ Vallejo came over in the afternoon to do an interview, to do this interview. So he's my guest today. I started feeling a little sick, and by nighttime I was feeling really bad. This morning I woke up and I have a cold, I guess. So I don't know what I have. Full blown Dukakis. Call it Dukakis. It's full blown. It's blowing up. Anyway, so I blew my nose, took some emergency, drank some coffee. It's early in the morning. I need to finish putting this together. And my guest today is a very good friend of mine, old friend, AJ Vallejo. And you know his band, Vallejo. They've been an institution in Austin and the region for a long time now, at least almost 20 years. So I guess I'm not going to bore you with more talking. AJ was nice enough to come over. We've been trying to do this for a while. We were going to do it a month ago. I went to see them play, but I missed their show after a show of mine in Houston. But it was nice to hang out and catch up. We talked. And then we've been trying to get this interview together since then. And so finally, he came over yesterday. And he actually brought me some brand new music from a record they're putting out called Brothers Brew in April. So look for Vallejo and enjoy some world premiere music. There's actually a couple pieces of songs that I play a whole song at the end. So here's some new Vallejo. All right. So the sweet sounds of Vallejo. Vallejo.
Vallejo.
AJ Vallejo in the house.
What's up, man?
Hi, welcome.
This is really cool. I like your digs.
Thank you.
I dig your digs.
Thank you for digging my digs. How are you doing today?
Great, man.
Yeah?
I feel a lot better than you.
Yeah. I do. I feel bad. I'm sorry. Sorry, I feel bad, but I'm glad it's a friend of mine that I can talk to.
Yeah, we're hanging out.
I don't even know where to start with you. What you guys are about to put out an album in April.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's called Brothers Brew.
Brothers Brew.
Tell me about this record. Did you do it at your place?
Yeah. This is the first record we've done fully at our place. We've always done pre-production at you know, our place, and we were always signed to higher entities like labels and stuff like that. So
right.
Those guys, of course, always were trying to feed their own. So
right. And yeah. Your last few records, if I'm not mistaken, you did your last one, you recorded yourself and then someone else mixed it.
Yeah,
Dwight Baker, right?
Dwight Baker mixed that, and that was fun. That was a learning process, but we learned a lot there. So I think after, you know, this is our 11th album, so like by now if you haven't figured out how to make your own record by now, it's like, so, and we got a cool studio. Me and Omar usually do a lot of stuff, but the studio is really great. So we're real happy with it because we did it all by ourselves, and I hope that people will see it. It sounds real organic and real, you know, it sounds cliche, but it just really sounds definitive of what Vallejo is. It's not so watered down, and, you know, some of the previous records are cool, but they just seem like they're a little bit...
Let me ask you,
overproduced, you know.
Right. What do you feel like definitively Vallejo is?
I think definitively is what capturing what we do live, and that's
right.
It's something I think we failed on a lot of the records to do. Like, I mean, the Vallejo that people dig on the record is totally different from
always
the Vallejo that you see live. You're like,
yeah.
But so
they're good records, but you're right. I mean, cool. I've watched you play now for almost a 20 years.
Yeah,
almost.
20. Yeah, right.
I was about to say a decade, but then yeah. I was like, "Fuck, that was 10 years ago."
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but for almost 20 years, I've watched you play.
Yeah,
and your shows are fiery, and it's almost like you push yourself as far as you can go, in the I don't know, I take no prisoners, kind of like going for blood in your performance and
absolutely.
Going for the throat.
Yep, that's absolutely. Well, I think that's what people
expect from you at this point, right?
At this point, yeah, and that might be a mistake now because we're all getting older, and it actually hurts now.
So does it? Do you still push yourself physically as much at shows?
Do you
jump in the audience? Do you climb on shit? Do you?
No, not doctor's orders. I stopped doing that, but I've been known to still, you know, I'll still jump in the audience and stuff if the mood strikes me right. But other than that, like, I try to stay. More keep it on stage, but definitely we're still pushing hard. You know, I'll sing and scream my lungs out till I taste blood. I mean, all that kind of stuff it's still very much there, but we're not self-medicating as much anymore. So that used to curb the pain.
Right, right.
Now you feel it, and, you know, it doesn't also help when you wake up and your kid, you know, we all have kids now, so your kid's hammering you with whatever he found that morning on the head, and that adds to the pain. So it's a good pain.
Well, I remember what we used to play together so much.
Yeah.
And you would play with my band, and I played with Vallejo.
Yeah.
But like when you would play with my band, sometimes we would just like, we would scream so much, you know, like having you up there maybe like push me to do this shit. Like I would go home with like literally bloody cuticles. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Like I have a picture of a guy that you had to take a picture of my bloody hand.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
I always felt like I drank broken glass after a show that we played together and stuff. So it's good. I mean, it's good to know that you're still, you know, pushing yourself. I know that, what's your touring schedule like? Do you guys keep it a little?
Well, right now, I mean, since it's taken, I mean, it's been 4 years since our last record. So, you know, we did the obviously when you put a record out, you definitely want to get out there and tour as much. But after, you know, after about a year or two of promoting a record, we just kind of kept it around, sticking around the Weekend Warrior thing and staying around the region, which has been really good to us. You know, we still do, we'll go out southeast, you know, go to California, you know, and hit those and then up north as well. But mostly, I mean, the great thing about living in Texas is it's such a huge state. They don't call it Texas music for nothing, or the red dirt scene that's kind of thrived in the past 10 years. Like those guys they're huge, you know, in this huge state that has anywhere from 30 to 80 markets that you can service and make a good living off of. Not,
yeah,
you know, make a living, like a really decent living. And it's funny because then they cross, you know, these Texas Red Dirt artists, they're amazing and they do really well here, but they cross the state line in Shreveport and they can't get arrested. You know what I mean?
So, right, right.
But so I think we're not really that genre, but we kind of fell into that. We've kind of fallen into that thing where we're kind of embraced by the state of Texas, and we can go anywhere, any nook and cranny in Texas or the Midwest, and we do well. So for the past 2 years, I say we're there. We're kind of stuck around like that, but obviously with the new record coming out, we're fixing to just really hit.
Out.
We're going to be out for a long time. So
yeah,
so it's cool.
Yeah,
I mean it's not as fun when you were younger, like when you get in a tour bus and you were like, oh my god, I can't wait, and you just didn't want to really come home. But it's crazy how when you grow up, you got kids and family, like you kind of want to be home. You know what I mean,
there's something to be said about being home.
Yeah, it's home's cool. I mean, and also just living in Austin. I mean, I know it sounds gay cliche, but Austin's a cool place to like live. Like
yeah.
I like living here. It's like I feel like I'm missing out, like if I'm in Portland, Oregon or something like that.
Right.
Which Portland's cool, I mean, but it's not Austin. Yeah.
Right. So for those that don't know, AJ is in a band, Vallejo, with his two brothers, his twin brother Alex.
Yeah.
And his other brother Omar.
Yeah.
Omar's older, right?
Yeah, no, he's younger actually.
Younger.
Mhm.
Yeah. Who started playing out of the three guys? How did that come about?
Well, I mean, obviously my parents' dream was like their first dream, they got us three trumpets because they wanted us to be like the Tijuana Brass. Like
right,
that,
right.
They loved the Tijuana Brass, Herb Alpert and all that. So they got us three trumpets. And we, you know, we did the whole thing, band. We were obviously the band geeks. I mean, we did the band, symphonic band.
Right.
Yeah, so we're all classically trained, you know, but we never really applied that, you know.
But I would say that you do, because there's a certain sense of you can hear an influence in your music sometimes. Well, you know, honestly, you can't really play Latin music without really being able to play music. Because one thing that I remember playing with you guys, and I've always said this to people, is that it was fucking hard.
It's very hard.
It's hard. You shift these feels from like a straight up rock to like a full on like salsa groove.
Yeah, well, it's all rooted in polyrhythms, and polyrhythms confuse the, you know, the average bear, who is used to the 4/4, you know.
Right. So I would say that you do apply the.
Yeah,
I mean, you guys were like, when we'd play those Beatle, you know, tribute things, you guys wouldn't play like some song that you guys would play. Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except for Me and My Monkey, which is like the hardest Beatles song to play.
Because we just tried to challenge, because we didn't want to just play I Want to Hold Your Hand or anything
like that. And to me, there's a certain influence, and I know you guys listen to them. There's a certain Zappa.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Well, we're all that stuff that kind of. Unfortunately, like, we would love to make records like Frank Zappa all day long, but you have to kind of cater to the simple-minded, which is the mass media. The mass demographic is basically, they want it simple because their life is complicated, so they don't want to have to think too hard. So you got to kind of dumb it down a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
So you purposely don't apply a lot of it.
No, I mean, yeah, purposely.
So
I mean,
it's not to confuse.
Yeah, if we really wanted to be like this creative, you know, musical act, I mean, we could do that, and that's, again, it goes back to the live show. We do it there, you know, so that's the platform for that. But as far as making records, I think people, you know, and you can see by our demographic, which is the blue collar workers and females, which is basically that they just want it. They just want
to dance. You're not going to put anything like in 13.
Yeah, yeah. Because that'll get right. Everybody goes to the bathroom during that song.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
Except for the three guys in the Joe Satriani shirts.
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to think of a prog band in my mind and beat me to it.
Yeah.
So you guys in high school, how early did you start playing those trumpets? How old were you guys?
I'd say we're like, I want to say 13. 12, 13, 14, around that, somewhere around
and
there.
So you guys were in band. Did you stay, all three stay on trumpet in band, or did you start splitting off?
Yeah, we started splitting off. Omar's the one that stayed because he seemed to excel really well, like, on that trumpet. He was just really good. Me and Alex.
He's still really good.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, but as far as, I'm talking about, like, this guy won, you know, state competitions, and the band director took him under his wing, and, you know, just really, I mean, Omar was just really good, down to his tone, the way he played, and I mean, it was just something special about the way he played. Obviously, me and Alex were decent. We could play the music part, but we, you know, it's pretty obvious. We knew, we were like, okay, I'm not really good at this. I was not even really interested in playing the trumpet. I just played it to appease my parents and also to learn music, you know.
Right.
But I had my eye on the guitar from day one, you know, because I noticed all my other friends were getting all the chicks, and I wasn't getting shit with that trumpet because it was just like,
yeah, that's not the chick.
Yeah, that's the trumpet's not really a chick thing. No. Unless you're Herb Alpert.
Right. So then Alex, he started playing drums.
He had his eye on the drums. I think he wanted to play the saxophone at first, but then I don't know. That didn't really he lost interest in that. And
so when did you guys start something outside of school, like your first kind of?
Well, it's a funny story because like, the one band that we really enjoyed playing in was jazz. We played in the jazz band because our band director was really really. He was just a hip cat as far as, like, he would pick all this cool Maynard Ferguson stuff and the Count Basie and,
right.
You know, Fitzgerald and all that, Duke Ellington, all this cool stuff that is not really, like, for high school, I mean, it's cool, you know, a lot of the jazz bands play that, but he was really, he would challenge us to, we were doing numbers that that were not really fit for a high school jazz band, you know, something a lot more advanced. But anyway, we just started playing, and then next thing you know, we would take that jazz band, me and my brothers would, we would start rehearsing jazz songs. We kind of took it further and like we would invite the band, the jazz band, over to our house.
Oh, really?
And rehearse these other killer crazy songs that the band director didn't say. He was like, I'd like to teach you all that stuff, but we don't have time in this realm of, so
right.
We took it upon ourselves to like, you know, learn it, and then we'd come back to him and bring these huge arrangements back, and he'd just be
like what?
I mean,
any
like Maynard Ferguson, Firestarter. You can Google that stuff. It stuff's just really smoking jazz, you know, groove stuff, you know. But that's when we started going having rehearsals at our house, and then kind of went into, you know, then we were starting to take do band versions of Kiss songs and Led Zeppelin with you know arrangements. We were starting to, you know. Write sheet music to all that kind of stuff because we were starting to get into, you know, rock music and chicks and pot and all that, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
All the good stuff.
All the good stuff, yeah. I mean, you don't... Count Basie's cool, but Led Zeppelin's cooler when you're high, you know what I mean?
Right.
So we were getting into that stuff, and then I think gradually it kind of... We picked up... Elmar started picking up the bass, and we started adding...
You realized that you guys had a core band,
yeah.
Which is the three guys.
Yeah, so next thing you know, we had, you know, a band, a rock band, and then we had... we started playing these little backyard parties, and you know our friends would come, and it's mostly dude based, like a lot of nerd dude guys, and then all our long hair friends, and we were kind of like, man, how do we get chicks to come see us? So we got
that's always the key.
Yeah,
man.
So we got the football player because he could sing, but we got the football player David Self, the quarterback, to sing in our band. He sounded,
yes.
He had a voice like Huey Lewis, which I love Huey Lewis, but that's not really cool. You know what I'm saying? But,
what kind of stuff were you doing then? Like covers?
Like Dude Looks Like a Lady. And,
right, right.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. You know, Motley Crue, whatever was hot back then. Obviously Led Zeppelin, Walking the Dog, you know.
So you weren't singing it, did you didn't have designs to sing? You didn't think you'd
if you look
it.
In the DVD, I'm like, the fourth or fifth singer of Vallejo.
Vallejo, right,
yeah,
right,
so,
right, right.
Yeah, so, I didn't start singing. Dude, I didn't start singing probably, I would say, four or five years into Vallejo. Playing as a live act and calling ourselves Vallejo,
so you guys just started as Vallejo.
Yeah,
that was it. The first band you had is the one you're in now. It's like you two,
Vallejo Brothers,
is, right?
But and we tried to come up with like names like Bad Boys and stuff, but nobody called us that. You know, they were just like, we can go see the Vallejos. You know, so it's one of those things, man. Then and yeah, so we always started doing that, and we'd start writing our own songs and stuff. And once we got all the chicks to come to our show, we kicked that dude out. And yeah. And then we had Buzz, who's our other singer. He had blue eyes, and all the girls loved him, and he could just sing the hell out of Cult. And we were doing a lot of Cult back then because Cult was cool.
This was in Birmingham?
Yeah, uh-huh. So, you know, the Cult was cool, and we were doing Cult and Cure and all that. You know, that new wave of alternative started coming in, Jane's Addiction.
Were you playing, like, clubs? Or?
Yeah, we were doing clubs. Oh, yeah. We were, I mean, dude, we were making $2,500, $3,000 in cash. Like when we were 16 years old, and we would hide it in a shoebox under our bed because we didn't want to deposit it.
Right.
Because I don't know why we were very anti-systematic back then. But and my dad found it one day and was like, he set it on the table and was like, "Are y'all dealing drugs?" Like no,
dad,
rock and
Vallejo.
Roll. We want to now. Y'all need to go to college. This is great, but this is not going to last forever. But we're like, we want to be like Kiss. He's like, you mean those clowns that wear makeup? You got to be crazy. But now they're our biggest fans, and I think once they realize that, I mean, there's something to be said about being 15 years old and yeah. You got a shoebox with $3,000 in it. You know, it's like,
yeah, there is something to be said about that. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. So, and it's been like that ever since. It's been a blessing and a dream. And I think my mom always liked it because it kept the brothers together. It kept,
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it kept us out of trouble because we obviously found a lot of that, but less trouble.
You Talk know? To me about that. I know stories about you guys yeah. going to like juvie and starting food fights and shit. And yeah. I remember you told me this great story, and when I was like, God, how can you go in there and be so bad? And you were like, what the hell were they going to do? Throw us in jail? We were already there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we'd started fights in jail.
So you had an irreverent attitude for a long time. Like you.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of it, I mean, as now that
the funny
back,
thing is because you guys are like mischievous sweet boys. That's because yeah. you're the nicest people.
Yeah,
in
we
the
were
world.
Nice. We didn't yeah. we didn't want to like beat. We weren't into beating right, people right, up right. or anything like. We just want to get drunk, get laid, and you know, break some shit. I mean, breaking shit is cool. Catching shit on fire is cool. I mean, who doesn't like that? I mean, if you don't
I'm
like
play
that,
this for Rocco when he's 10.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He's been like, oh, he's already. You should see this. Art that he did on the wall, it's horrible, but it's to him it's a masterpiece to him. But yeah, man, but mostly just that's what I'm saying, like we just did a lot of, and I think looking back on it, it was a little rebelling in the sense that like my parents, you know, moved, we were called Vallejo, and
yeah,
and they moved us to Alabama, and we got a lot of, when we were younger, we got a lot of shit for like, you know, our friends in school were calling, you know, spics and taco
right,
eating
right, right, right.
And, you know, just there was a little
how's
bit
that,
of,
I mean, how has that been? Like, what do you don't encounter that anymore, do you?
No, I mean, and Austin's such a, well, obviously not anymore.
Oh, you're saying in Alabama, yeah, this is kind of racism.
Yeah, this is in Alabama. Yeah. I mean, Alabama, I mean, beautiful place, you know, nothing bad against that place, but there is, unfortunately, still a lot of ignorance in that sense. And yeah. when it comes to that, I mean, you know, the N-word's thrown around, like,
yeah,
and it's not even considered bad to say that right. there, you know. But obviously, the minute there's a minority, and we were the only like Mexican kids in the school, so right. Like, but
what's funny because I just talked to Alejandro Escovedo about mm-hmm. it, and he was saying that there were people that wouldn't even play his record when he was on Ryko Disc because they couldn't even pronounce his name.
Yeah,
and then his own cousin Sheila E. dropped that.
Yeah,
because it's so much easier to yeah. get through life.
Yeah, and Sheila E. just that's I mean how easy is that to say? That's
yeah,
pretty,
that's
pretty
true.
Simple.
Yeah,
but now but sorry, they didn't even call us Vallejo. They call us Frito-Lay, like, because they, you know.
I'm sorry, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, they're like, Frito-Lay. So, because I think they just couldn't wrap their heads around that word even, like, they're right. just like, and there was no such thing as Valero gas stations yet, so they couldn't, because that, we get a lot of that right, now, right. you know. We were in some place, and the guy, like, y'all give it up, Valero, like.
Oh, the announcer guy?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, Jesus, you know, with my name, it's fucking...
Yeah.
I think I can count on one hand the times that an announcer has actually said it right.
Yeah, I know, but now, that's another thing that's cool about, you know, just the markets that we play. Everybody knows who Vallejo is now, so it's obviously not a mystery about this thing, but...
Right.
But yeah, going back to, I mean, the whole thing in the... I think a lot of the craziness was stemmed from, you know, a little bit of, you know, people poking on us, and the way to poke back was to... break their shit, you know
right
mean?
Right
and not hurt them or be rude, you know, we didn't fight fire with fire in that sense, like be rude back to them, cause
right
I would like to think we were above that, our parents taught us better, but
well did all three of you guys like egg each other on, or was there one of you that was always like, ah, guys, maybe
dude,
we
that's
shouldn't
totally what it, that's why we did so much things yeah. so you everything's magnified three times,
and one guy would be like, hey, let's do this, and the other two would be like, fuck yeah,
yeah,
let's go,
absolutely yeah. man. So I mean, so there was always one guy, there was always one party initiating something, so we had
right
we you know, we had a plethora, a series of things going on. I mean, it was like a full-on project, you know. Omar had some stuff boiling and it was going down like this Friday night, and me and Alex were already working on something that was going down like tomorrow, you know. So yeah. like there was constantly stuff happening, so and it, somewhere in all that we were actually rehearsing and stuff, and my parents, they, as long as I heard music downstairs, they were like, oh, they're doing right, good right. yeah, they're we can hear them, they're not out doing something
yeah.
they're as long as there's music coming from the basement, they're
so
cool.
I mean, you gotta actually probably say that then music kind of kept
absolutely.
You out of trouble.
Yeah, it did. As I'm saying, like, I think it kept us out. And there's
at
something
at least it kept your hands busy.
Yeah, right. And the thing is, it just definitely when you're into something so much, like recording a song, and you know,
right.
you know what that feels like when you record, and the joy of playing it back and hearing how cool it is.
Yeah.
And playing it 10 20 times
Fuck
that
yeah,
night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, drinking beer, smoking weed, checking it out. And that, I mean...
We used to do that at my old place. We'd write songs and like sit back and just listen to them all day.
Yeah, all day long.
It was
like,
great.
Yeah, we had like, I don't know, like 30 songs that nobody ever heard. And but to us, it was like, man, this is the greatest shit ever.
So when 5 years into it and you started becoming this singer, you guys were out of school and you were like on the road doing it. And
you were
playing regionally around Alabama and all around.
Yeah, everywhere.
And so what brought you guys to Austin? You guys hadn't recorded a record then, had you?
We recorded that EP, the Sins EP.
Right.
Because we wanted
right.
We went one
Heavy Sugar.
Yeah, Heavy Sugar and
that's
all
my
that.
Jam.
Yeah, right. And we recorded that with the funds from we went in and we won a you know talent contest or something you know a battle of the bands or something.
Right.
So with that money we recorded that and that was the first thing and you know that record's cool looking back on it but we had obviously no idea what a song was. We weren't really interested in writing you know a radio hit. We were just out making banging you know making noise which is cool so that record is what it you know it is what it is
I only kind of know the Nick there but what was the scene like in Birmingham like as a music scene was
it's actually man it's actually pretty I mean it's pretty cool and the Nick is responsible for a lot of that I mean I remember the Nick was a great I mean I saw 311 there when in front of 50 people I mean Jane's Addiction used to play there I mean it used to be an old 7-Eleven so just imagine an old 7-Eleven like
that's what it was?
Yeah, it used to be like a... Yeah, so imagine an old 7-Eleven just with a stage in it, just with all the, everything cut out. And seeing bands like Jane's Addiction, Blind Melon, the Chili Peppers, Ice-T, I mean, you name it. Every alternative act came through there, and we saw these bands. Like, you know, it was just... Wow. So the Nick was cool like that, you know? But they got a cool music scene. Verbena came from there, and so did... Remy Zero and all those cats, so...
Yeah, and... Tommy Shaw.
Yeah, Tommy Shaw. Six. Yeah, absolutely. So
that's why Remy Zero did come from there.
Yep. So So there's a cool little scene, but it was nothing like what we were doing. And then, you know, it was still we just left because after a while, just you know, the rock Latino sounds of Vallejo, like from Birmingham, Alabama, that didn't. It didn't stick well there. It didn't stick anywhere.
How did you choose Austin? Was there? Did you know someone out here? Had you been here?
Well, we were friends. Yeah, we knew somebody. We were friends with somebody. We were friends with all the cats in Orlando has a cool little scene. Not I don't know about anymore, but back about the mid '90s, it was a big scene there with 7 Mary 3 our friend Rob Thomas from Matchbox 20. All those cats lived there. Seven Dust. You know,
are you still friends with Rob Thomas?
Yeah, we're friends with all those cats. Every time they swing through here, we always hang out. It's really good to see them. That scene, you know, I'm talking about that that alternative radio rock scene that was happening.
You guys were a big part of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
At that point, like you guys started getting bigger deals. Well, let's say you moved to Austin.
Yeah,
and then you guys, I met you pretty much right when you moved.
We brought David Cotton that Sins thing and you know we thought nothing of it and me and Bruce were walking down the street like two nights later and like cruising down 6th Street and David was like hey you Vallejo guy like, yeah he's like if you guys are half as good as that CD y'all gave me y'all got a gig here and we're like awesome we got a
so
gig
you got it through him and not through Dan so this guy David Cotton that AJ just brought up is kind of like a legendary Austin music scene character. He played drums. He was very good friends with Bill Hicks, and then he was crazy, I guess, on alcohol and drugs, and cleaned up his act and became
talent buyer.
Now he's a talent buyer for a few places in town. So anyway, he's also a colorful character.
He's like, Alex, never calls me back. Could you get Alex Vallejo to call me?
So then you got into the Steamboat, which was another kind of Austin staple place where
it was happening,
at that
man.
Point I had a residency with my band Mr. Rocket Baby.
Yeah, it was Rocket Baby, and then who else was playing that at the time?
Billy White was playing.
Billy White on Tuesdays. That was amazing.
Yeah,
basically it was basically all the people that worked there and me and you and like five other people every Tuesday.
Yeah.
But so we were like awesome, man. Like so when can we play like. Weekends or and he's like no Mondays
right
at 8
right yeah
we're like okay all right well so we started playing there and opened up for Pariah they were the hot metal band at the time Sims and all that
they were still playing then
then we started with them and I think we moved over with Wednesdays with you guys right
yeah something like that
yeah and then I think y'all...
You guys immediately, though, like, picked up, and then we switched places. Like, you opened for us on Wednesdays for maybe a month, and then your crowd got so much bigger than ours.
Yeah.
Honestly, we just flip-flopped, yeah, and we started opening for you guys.
Looking back on it, it may seem like it was quick, but it wasn't that. It took about a year.
I mean, really? Because it always seems to me like you guys were here, like, literally, like, maybe 6 weeks, and then all of a sudden it was like...
Well, that was obviously being the new kids. But being the new kids in town of any scene is like, that's, you know, it's easy to come in and make noise, you know. It's like, so yeah, we had that advantage, but I think we didn't have much more than that. And
well, you know, you guys, from my perspective, from somebody that saw you guys come in, you were so fucking happy to be here.
Oh, we were you know ecstatic, what I mean? Yeah.
You were so stoked about everyone's music. I remember at one point, I don't remember, was it you? Somebody in your band made a t-shirt of everyone who was in that sort of scene at the time and wrote their name. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think that was Bruce.
It was Bruce. Yeah, uh-huh. It was like all of our bands. Like, you guys were so like fucking ecstatic a part of this scene. And it was, everybody loved you guys because you were also, you know, band.
It was a musical Disneyland. I mean, to come in, imagine in Birmingham, you have just the Nick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
and
it.
And then all of a sudden, like, you come to this town that has 80 Knicks. You know what I mean? It's we're like, what the hell is this? This is crazy.
Yeah.
But going back, we were going to move to Orlando, and then my friend Crystal, who's lived in Birmingham, she moved, Crystal Stevens, she moved here, and she was the one that was like, I know y'all are, I mean, we were literally, the plan was made, New Year's, we're going to take this money, and we're going to go to Orlando. She was like, before y'all do that, I know y'all, everything's set in stone, but just come here, just come check this place out real quick. Because she goes, every night I go out, I think of you guys. I mean, I just think y'all would just murder here, you know? So, all right. In our heads, we grew up in Texas, so we were like, all I remember is Mexicans, just a lot of Mexicans, you know what I mean? Like, so, and that's not a bad thing. I'm just saying that's all I got.
Right.
Because we moved.
Like from, El Campo or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, and I mean, like, Mexicans being, you know, the Mexicans that everybody knows as
with the cowboy hat.
Tejano scene. So I was kind of like, oh man, I don't know about all that. But so anyway, we came, and it was just, she took us to Steamboats and the Back Rooms and what was hot,
Black Cat. Did you guys ever play there?
No, we never played there. I mean, it was immediately established by Danny that was like, you want to stay here, don't go over there. So
that was a kind of, that you kind of had to make that choice.
Yeah, we were very loyal to Danny because we knew. We just believed, and we completely had foresight that we would be selling that place out. So we were like, and then why would you stop it? Black Cat was cool, but it was not a big venue. So
no, and it didn't have lights, and the PA was kind of funky. The production, and you had to play 4 hours without stopping.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, and so just the whole, it just seemed like a better package. Danny's plan seemed cool. Nothing against Black Cat, because I saw a lot of cool acts come out of there, you know, but yeah, so it was quickly established that we had to stay there, and it was just like an absolute, like, don't even entertain the idea of playing over there, because believe me, they'd come, you know, ask us, and we were like, man, thanks a lot. We love this club, but, you know.
Right.
But we stayed loyal to Steamboat, and Steamboat was good to us. We made, Danny and us, you were there, we down there counting all, there was just piles of cash and weed and beer and everything. It was
a good time.
It was a great time.
It was a very familial.
Yeah,
We were all like a family.
Yeah,
and we all hung out there.
We all played together. We were all either on some kind of bill, or we were all going to go to somebody's house after that.
And, yeah,
and it was awesome. I mean, it was great. And it's not, unfortunately, there's nothing like that right now. It's possible something like that could happen. I can see things bubbling under, but there's nothing going on right now like that. It's so cool.
Do you think that maybe with our just our time on the scene here in general, it would be hard to be kind of a part of whatever is coming up like that? Do you think that would be?
Well,
do you remember many old guys in our kind of scene?
Because I remember really.
There was Doster, but he's only like 10 years older than us or something.
Or the Joe Ely's. I mean, I
but he didn't hang out with us. At
Yeah, C-Bank. no, not at all. I think we're kind of considered. Now those kind of, we're the new Joe Ely's, you know what I mean? Like, we're like, you know, people, they when they think Vallejo, they're like killer live band, awesome, you know.
Right.
But they, you know, almost kind of, we're like the Mexican Bad Company. You know what I mean? Like, we're classic rock. we're classic rock, dude. You know what I mean? Like, so in people's eyes, you know what I mean? People are like, you know, they're
Compañía mala.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't deny.
No puedo deny.
No puedo deny. So how long were you guys playing before TVT, which was the first label that signed you guys? When was that? Was that like 1995 or something?
Yeah, that was 95, 96, because it took us about a year to finish that record, the Shining Sun album. I remember bringing it to your house, and I was like, hey, dude, check it out. And you were like, dude, you guys are going to be huge. Yeah. Let's smoke a bowl.
I think if you were to come and play me the worst record, I'd be like, man, you guys are going to fucking fail. Let's smoke a bowl. Anyway. So what was that? How was that? That was your first introduction to like the big business.
Absolutely.
Where was TVT at that time? Because
they're based out of New York. And
I mean, like, where were they at? They didn't have Nine Inch Nails.
No, they did have Nine.
They
Inch
still
Nails.
Had Nine Inch
yeah,
Nails.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Basically, where they were is TVT obviously means TV Tunes, and basically, I don't know if a lot of people remember, but back in the early '90s, if you went to like a Walmart or Best Buy or Target, I don't know if Best Buy was around back then, but and remember, you saw all of a sudden you saw these compilations of TV, you know, theme songs. Yeah. All that you could get and all.
Right.
He made his fortune selling those things and made a lot of money. And then obviously he had signed, you know, Trent Reznor, and I mean, and that record just blew up. So I think with between those, the fortune of having that stuff, like he could go out and all of a sudden he was a label and he could go out and.
Now, did they have their own distribution, or were they attached to another?
No, they had their own distribution full.
So it's a pretty big operation.
Yeah, it's a pretty big operation. I mean, you know, while we were on there, they had Snoop Dogg and. You know,
oh, really?
Lil Jon and Seven Dust obviously was very successful.
Right.
Those guys, you know, they were selling millions of records. I mean, but that was a really hot scene back then. And that's, again, I think we kind of felt lost in that whole thing. We weren't.
Is that record you made in San Francisco?
That Beautiful Life, yeah.
Oh, the one afterwards.
Yeah, the one after, okay. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. All that stuff was coming up. And, you know, obviously anybody that knows what Vallejo sounds like, we didn't really fit in the Seven Dust, Disturbed, Linkin Park world, you know what I mean?
No.
And then, not to make matters worse, they threw, and when later on when we signed with Sony, I don't know why they would throw us on these tours with these bands, like these Disturbs and the Fuels, and they're all
because
great
they
bands.
Because they were pushing your songs to alternative rock stations, the X's and whatever at the time.
Pretty much,
you guys were playing a lot of radio shows then too.
Oh
right?
Yeah, big huge radio shows, which that's a whole nasty, you know, circus to be a part of, where they would spin your songs for a month before you came, and then the minute you did their show, that you weren't even on the plane out of their city, and they would drop you off the list. You know what I mean? So, and they did that's how they made listeners.
I had this thought. I remember. So that was your first time into the. It wasn't at that point when you guys went out and played. Somebody else had a stake in you.
Mm-hmm.
And there was you were kind of responsible for bringing in money that people had invested in you, and it stopped kind of being about kind of rolling with your pals and the party and all that stuff. Because I remember you were very you were learning about the business a lot, and you were in there. I remember a song that you wrote. Was it called Big Phones?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this stuff was really affecting you.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
The way that it worked, and how did you feel about it at the time?
I was miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, I mean, because a lot of it, not so much miserable. I mean, we were happy and very fortunate. Felt very fortunate for what was going on, the success we were having. But it was like all of a sudden, like you wrote this. Hey, man, I wrote 5 new cool songs, and they're just like, oh, that's great.
They don't care.
Just think of, you know, just keep those for later, you know, when we do your next album, and should we want to exercise the next option 2 years from now? You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
So you couldn't really you couldn't flourish as an artist, like to put all, which is so great now. I mean, we can get into later, but it's so great about how everything's turned for the musician now that.
Right. So even though they were giving you money at the time, it's still, you didn't feel like it was a liberating experience that money was helping you go anywhere.
No, the money wasn't even that great. You almost felt like kind of prisoner to it, because here you are on the road. They throw you in a tour bus, which is going against your record royalties. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're paying for everything.
You're paying for everything. Like they're paying for nothing.
Right.
And they're wiring $500 into your account every week, which is not really that much money.
No.
To pay your bills back at home or for whoever. But that's it. I mean, and you're playing you're playing in front of 30,000 people, like, you know what I mean? And you're getting, you know, maybe $100 a day on the road. Right. That's what's so cool, that it's cool in a sense, but looking back on when you go home, you don't really have much. But as long as they, you know, there's the chicks.
As long as you're on the road, you're safe.
Yeah.
When you come home, there's no money and nothing to do.
Well, you're distracted by the chicks and everybody's throwing drugs and there's free everything. Yeah. Dude, everything's free. You can get, if you're like, I want steak and lobster, you can have steak and lobster. You know, it's like, but which, by the way, goes on your tab too.
Right, right. Yeah. It seems free, but you're paying for
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's kind of, but when you're like in your early 20s, that's cool. I mean, you know what I mean?
Right.
But as you get older, you got to start thinking about kind of creating and building your own empire. And I think that's gradually what me and my brothers totally were like, we always had a little plan.
Well, that's definitely what you guys have done. But,
yeah.
But let's stay here for a minute. So when you did Shining Sun and you went out and did your, the touring for it and all the promotion for it,
yeah.
And you came back to do Beautiful Life. How jaded were you going into the next one? Did you come in and who was your manager? I don't think I even...
His name was Eric Cohen, and he was based out of New York, and we hired him
was
because...
Was he like a big guy that didn't really... You had to deal with an assistant or something?
Well,
or?
That's gradually getting into... When we were signed to Sony, we got, you know, Provident and all those guys, and we're talking about like a manager that we never even spoke to, you know, because who had his own little minion that...
Right. We go to some meeting with him, and it seems like you guys... And then the rest of the time,
it was like, you feel like it's like Bozzy or some shit. You're talking to some dude, like, on a box. You're like, you're like, hey, dude, when are we going to get to meet you? But it was cool, man. I mean, you learn all those things in hindsight, they're just all cool things we learned, and it's, you know, it's not nothing... We got nothing bad out of it, so...
Right.
We're cool with it. I mean, it just wasn't as fun as I thought it was going to be, you know.
So how did that end? How did your time at TVT end?
Beautiful Life. Basically,
did your contract just run out? They didn't want to renew.
They had determined that there was, you know, obviously the what do you call it? The new metal was in full swing on radio.
Right.
So like obviously there was nothing on that record like that. You can go back and hear it. You know, we were making music that sounded awesome at Steamboat at 1:30 in the morning and with 600 people in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was cool to us. But there was they just were like, okay, there's nothing we can play on modern rock radio with this stuff. And we were like, how about like taking UR, or I mean, which is Stereo, but songs that we had like Immortal. Why don't you put that on like adult radio, you know what I mean? Like
they only wanted to do
their forte was that those X stations and stuff. Right. So and it was, man, you know, when they let us go, you know, Steve Gottlieb, the president, he was cool. He was like, and I wish we could have bottled up what you guys did live and sold that, because we'd all be rich and we wouldn't even be here right now. Right. But since we can't, which, you know, he's like, man, I'm gonna let you guys go, free to do what y'all want. And
well, that's a good ending.
Yeah, it's a cool ending. And then the crazy thing is, you know, we meet Emilio Estefan within the year and jump right over to Sony. So it was and that's another.
But then at
craziness.
The same time, you did have the security of that, and I don't know if he's been talked about enough in this podcast, just about the scene. Is like Danny Crooks, who owns Steamboat, you always had a place to come back and work on
always,
your shit.
Always.
The shows were long, and I remember that he would, if you had a residency, he would remind you if you hadn't written a new song in a couple of weeks.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, hey, you guys need to, need to get some new songs going, buddy.
Yeah, because we're tired of hearing the same 10 songs, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Who, like, God love, Breedlove, who I love Breedlove. But, you know, those guys, they had like, they would take a two-hour set, and they only have like 8 songs, and somehow stretch 8 songs into 2 hours, and everybody loved it.
Well, we all kind of had to do that at the point when we first got on the SEMA. I mean, that was a thing, and sort of like almost the whole region, as you did better, your fucking headlining is 12 to 2, and there's no fucking around, because these people are trying to sell booze.
Yeah.
Like, don't fuck me.
Yeah, off at 1:51, Danny would be back
get
there.
Get the fuck, yeah.
He's like, man, you got 9 minutes.
Yeah, go.
I mean, go now. Like,
We'll play that first song you played again.
Yeah, so, man, we don't have any more
songs. I
remember
he said that to me. I was coming up the stage, and I was like, Danny, we don't have anything. As it was like Mr. Rocket Baby, like, we started our residency there, like, a month into the band, and we had to play a two-hour set. Like, it was like, half of it was like the Beatles and the Hollies and the Zombies and shit, and then the rest of it was, like, I mean, until we were able to write enough songs to fill up the 2 hours. But I remember going off stage and him going like, you gotta get up there.
Yeah.
You gotta play that first song again.
Yeah, so, I mean, we always had that, and that's why I think we just love Austin so much, because we've, like you're saying, going back, whatever happened, whether it was the ups and downs of TVT or, you know, coming off the Sony thing, like, Austin was always there. Right. We could always come back, and Austin was right. open arms, you know?
Yeah.
So
tell me about the Emilio Estefan thing.
Well, just that, Sony. That wasn't even very long of a tenure because, like...
did he hear... Did you guys showcase for him?
We did a show for High-End Lights. We did a House of Blues High-End Lights tour because they were like, man, we want Vallejo. Y'all are real colorful live, and y'all are the perfect band to show off our lights and
right.
with the drum solo and all that stuff. So Emilio was sitting up in the balcony in the one in Miami or where, the House of Blues, wherever, somewhere in Florida. And immediately, he was just like, I want him. He's real animated. I want to sign you guys.
Yeah.
You know? We're like, that's cool, man. Well, our manager's over there. Just talked to him. We were kind of just jaded. We were just kind of like, that's
right,
cool.
Right.
Like, I think he was expecting us to be more excited. You know what I mean?
Right.
But
I remember
my mom was excited.
She was?
Yeah.
Yeah, my grandma was excited when she had told me forever, like, even in the 80s, like, well, if you want to play music, you need to go and talk to Emilio and whatever. And then they knew, you know, at least Alex came with me one time to Thanksgiving or whatever.
Yeah.
And they knew you guys. They knew we were friends. And when my grandma saw that in the newspaper that you guys had gotten signed, because there was some article about it in Houston.
Yeah.
She was like, look, your friends did it. Like, and you didn't do it. You know?
Emilio Estefan, yeah. But, man, it was cool. I mean, and, dude, again...
How involved was he? Was he
not very involved? I mean, he's a visionary, and you know, he was a huge influence to me and my brothers about building your little empire. Like what we try to build.
Did you guys have talks about that with him? Like,
no,
you know, like,
we just kind of saw what he was doing. He had his own restaurant and his own studio, and he had, you know, five different rooms, and Shakir's in one, John Cicada's in another, and you know,
right.
There was
all
this creative energy going on,
and then right then there was also the Latin music explosion was happening.
Yeah, that was happening. Ricky Martin and Shakir, that stuff was in full force, you know. But so that's what's so crazy about the climate of the music back then, though. You still had that new metal stuff had not died off yet, which
was going.
It was like
turning into like rap metal too.
Yeah, it was like but then it was the Lamp Biscuit and all that crap, and you know, the Corn and stuff, which was cool. You know, if you dig that stuff.
I wish they were actually called the Corn.
Yeah, the Corn. Yeah, but you know, so there's that stuff, and then
And so when they put you guys out, did they do the same thing with you guys? Did they try and shop you to a more Latin market?
No, not at all. Well, we did the Watcha Tour, which is
the
Spanish version of the Warp Tour. And that was cool, but...
Did you not feel a big kinship with a bunch of
rock
and Espanol bands?
Not at all. Because, I mean, dude, I mean, we're... Yeah, we have a Latin flair and a Latin...
We're a rock band.
We're a rock band. I mean, we're not Latin rock. We're rock Latin. I mean, with...
Right.
Or rock with a Latin flair. I wouldn't even say Latin. I mean, you got to be careful throwing that Latin word around, because you got to... Latin is like... You got to be Latin. I mean, it's like... Yeah. You know, but so... They just saw us, you know, the Rockin' Espanol bands. They thought we were cool. They thought we were a great live act, but they were like, "What's these gringos doing?" You know, they're like, "No, no." The only thing that is Latin about these guys is their last name, you know. So,
right.
But we made some fans, you know. But again, somehow I don't know why we were thrown to that X radio, you know, and that
again,
didn't,
and that just didn't take.
Well, End of the New did really well, and I don't want to blame it on the 9/11 stuff, but our single was released. September the 12th, which is the day after our second single. So obviously nobody was listening to the radio a day after 9/11. So, and then obviously, some of their building, like a chunk of that thing hit their building, and they were shut. The New York offices were shut down for, I don't know, a number of months. So I think what happens is then they came back to work the next year. And then I think they went in and cleaned house, and just, they were like, drop whatever band's not huge.
Until you guys got dropped.
Yeah, we got dropped. So that wasn't even a very.
How's that happen when you get dropped? Do you get a call? Do you get a fax? Do you get a something?
You just get, you know, Mark Prock was our manager, and you know,
right.
They just, I'm sure he got a call, and you know, he's like, you know, I got some bad news for you guys.
Yeah.
But we kind of saw it coming, because there was nothing happening. I mean, at the same time, everybody, once again, that the scope of how crazy and how traumatic and horrible that 9/11 thing was. Nobody was, including us, everybody was glued to their televisions for like months, you know.
I was mastering a record that week.
And then what we did, they did take us to Miami, and, you know, we started writing for the new record, which turned out to be, which was a very dark, heavy record, which turned out to be Black Sky, which, you know, never saw the light of day. We just released it on our label, you know, a few years ago. But it's a very dark, heavy record, you know. So,
so after that, you guys were done.
We were done. So that's when we started Stereo and VMG. So
tell me about VMG. That's a Vallejo Music Group.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So,
and that's your label. But at this point, you guys have other artists.
Yeah. Now we have like 14 artists.
You have 14 artists?
14 artists. Yeah.
Who all do you have on your label now?
Candyland, which is Natalie Zoe, Candyland, Truth Vallejo. Those guys are still. That was one of the first acts. I mean, Overlord is obviously. I mean, since we've made like 6 records with that guy.
Yeah.
And then the Dirty Worms, who have great success. Right. And, you know, Smack's gone on to do his, he's branched off to do his own little label, and he's in with the Tech N9ne crew and all that stuff. And then, you know, Kendall Beard, the girl from, American Idol. And then Omar's got like the Bipolar Bears. And then, you know, you just.
That's a great name.
They're really cool. You dig that band. But, you know, there's, you know, a whole handful of others, everybody from. You know, the Ram Denises to people that we even work with, like the Jackson Taylors. I mean, these are all cats that, like, they don't do, they just do their records with us from, you know, they don't want to do, because we just kind of embrace, we're like, man, let's have fun making a record, because that's all we wanted to do. We were like, man, this is not fun. It wasn't fun making records, like, for those guys. And we were like, let's hang around in the house and just take our time. And
yeah.
If you get frustrated, let's just go to the bar and get some nachos and have some beers and we'll come back. You know, like don't stress. The time, the clock's not ticking. You know what I mean? Like
Here, hang on just 1 second. Okay, so that's your label, VMG Group, and you guys have VMG, the Vallejo Music Group.
Yeah.
And you guys have a number of artists and you guys produce and do you guys make all the records in your own
In the studio. Absolutely.
Who all lives in that house now?
It's just me. Just me and my son and my girl, Casey. And, Omar, you know, me and him share the studio because we both do the act side of there. Alex has kind of taken wearing the hat of doing all the publicity and the online stuff.
Well, and then also he started a music festival.
Yeah, he's got Pechanga.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, Alex is definitely really good at...
Lars Ulrich of the band.
He's good at, like, you know... People seem to he's the likable one in the band, you know, like, you know, not that me and Omar aren't, but like I'm selective about who I like to talk to, you know. I'm not really, Alex is really, you know, he's good with talking to people and stuff like that, and people seem to really warm up to him, you know.
Yeah, he seems to have a good idea. So you guys run a business. Do you have anyone that kind of handles anything for you guys?
Well, we have
you guys handle everything.
We handle everything, and we have a little team. I mean, we have like artists and interns and you know, people like that. And
how do you handle things like publicity for the label? Alex handles that?
He handles that. You know, he has his company is called Buzzwire, and he runs everything out of the media center, which is up there in where the. You know, the airport.
It's really fucking exciting. I mean, you got to say it's, you know.
Yeah, it's very,
really cool.
It's very cool. So, yeah, man. So, like, that's where everything works. Everything's done in-house, from the artwork to the getting the people signed up to, you know, the publishing, to promoting their record, to, you know, we do webcasts, webinars, seminars on how to, you know, what to
Did
do
you
with
call
money.
It a webinar?
Yeah, it's a webinar. Okay. Like, you can now with, you know, Skype, you know, what we do is we'll get, you know, a group of people to come into the media center, you know, up to 100 people sitting in the thing, and we can get Peggy Dole from LA to Skype on a big screen, and we have these webinars, these seminars
that's awesome.
To talk to these, you know, aspiring musicians, how to, like, you know, how to save their money on road tips, and how to save their money, how to sign up their stuff, how to protect their songs. I mean, just everything. It's almost like music business 101. So we try to teach all these people, like, hopefully that they'll not have to go through all the mistakes that we all have made, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
You know what? I'm sorry to sidetrack, but there was a story one time. Didn't you go on? You did a tour with like Sammy Hagar and Slash.
Yeah.
Yeah. And didn't Slash like go on stage every night, like even when he wasn't asked by fucking Sammy Hagar, to the point where they had to ask him to like not come up there anymore?
He's totally one of those guys, dude.
What happened there? Tell this story, because it's funny. I've always thought about it.
Well, he's just funny, man. Like, he's just one of those cats that, like, Slash.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when their MTV Video Awards where he went out with Michael Jackson, and he wouldn't leave. Like, security picked him up.
Yeah, he's still like playing there. Like, yeah. But he was like that with Sammy, because Sammy would always be like, "Give it up, Slash," and Slash.
he wouldn't get off the stage.
Yeah, dude. But I think I tell you the story about when we were playing with him, and his manager, Slash's manager, comes up to me and he goes, "Hey man, you want to come hang out with Slash, and you know, we want to hang out with you. I'd like to kind of talk to you. And I was like, that's cool. So I'm like, awesome, I get to hang out with Slash. So I go back to the dressing room, and you know, he's like, hey man, Slash looking for a singer, and what's your
another guy from Birmingham though.
Huh? What's that?
Wait, he got another guy to sing.
Yeah,
kid that played with Jellyfish.
Yeah, yeah. God.
Eric Dover.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
So they're looking for a singer.
Yeah. So he's like, what's your connection with your band? And you know, what's your thing? I was like, well, they're only my brothers. And he's like, oh, I'm
just
so sorry.
Vallejo.
Yeah. He goes, yeah, we're called Vallejo, like this. But he's like, so sorry, I asked. Man, let's just party anyway. So anyway, we're in there with Slash. Slash shows up, big bottle of Jack. We're all passing around, having a good time. I'm, you know, I don't really not much to say to the dude other than, hey, dude, you rock. Blah. So the craziest thing, this guy, his manager walks in and goes, hey, man, this chick, she's in a wheelchair. She doesn't have any legs. And this chick wants to come in and play for Slash. Like, she has Stravinsky's
right, violin.
Violin.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's his violin. It's like.
Oh, she actually has Stravinsky's violin.
Yeah, she has.
Oh, wow.
It's worth like millions of dollars.
Right.
And this,
oh, not a Stradivarius violin, but she actually has the composer Stravinsky's
violin.
She
has his violin.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, but she wants to come in and play for Slash, and she doesn't have any legs. And then the story that he prefaced it with this story at saying she didn't have any legs because she had that violin and she was at the subway and basically a burglar or something grabbed the violin and she took off with it and she chased him and he threw it. And, you know, she was yelling, and he threw
it. Sorry, this is just a crazy story. I'm not laughing at the situation.
He threw it, like, in the train, in the tracks, and she jumped down there and grabbed it and threw it back and saved this violin and lost her legs. So,
Wow.
Which raised the insurance of the whole violin. Now it was, like, worth, you know, millions of dollars. Now it's worth a gazillion dollars because of all this, because all of a sudden they got insurance. So
wow,
that's exactly Slash and all of us were like, wow, bring her in, you know, like. So anyway, she comes in and plays this piece, and it's just, oh man, it's just chill bumps, you know, it's just amazing. Yeah. You know, and so they start talking and I'm hammered, and you know, I wasn't paying attention. I didn't hear the story about how much the violin was worth or it was even
oh no,
what it was. So she's talking to him, and I'm hammered, dude. So I just start picking the violin up and just like, and I'm like, I was like, like a dead cat, dude. It was like E.F. Hutton in there. Everybody just turned around, like mouths open, like, oh my god, dude, like slow motion, man. Like five huge guys, like jump me and attack me, and one guy grabs the violin. And then they just, I mean, they attacked me like I was freaking, like I had a bomb or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, and they, I mean, they, I didn't even get to say bye to Slash or anything.
They got you the hell off the bus.
I was taking out full Nelson out of the freaking bus, like, oh, man.
That's insane.
Yeah, so, and then the next time I saw Slash, I was like, hey, man, sorry about that hole. He's like, man, it was kind of funny, dude. We were, after she left, we were laughing our ass off. Like, that was just like. That was hilarious, man. But I mean, I felt really bad. I didn't know that.
It's a good story, though. Well, she still tells it,
huh?
Well, dude, then this fucking guy picks it up. He can't even play. Starts playing it.
Dude, I was like, yeah, it was bad, dude. But yeah, but that's my Slash story. So,
when you guys started doing your own records, the first one that you did, Stereo, what did you guys do that whole thing with Dwight Baker?
Yeah. Well, the thing we started with Carl Thiel,
and
he's awesome. You know. Yeah. I just didn't, I thought it was awesome, and I was like, man, this record could just, I mean, this is our first record that's like, it sounded great, and it sounded like it was up there with Beautiful Life and all those cool, which are okay looking back on it, records, but I was like, man, this is our first album, I really wanted to make a statement, you know,
right.
So, and I just could not help but get that Podunk record, the first Podunk record just sounded so killer, like that, I don't know if you've ever heard it. But it's a band from Austin. They're called Podunk. And
yeah, yeah. Oh, no, yeah, you're talking to the people.
The way that... Oh, yeah, yeah, not the people, yeah. Yeah, yeah, the people. But the band, you know, like, I just couldn't remember. I was like, man, that record sounds so good. Like, you know, who did that? So, and my friend was like, Dwight Baker did it. And I was like, I want him to mix it, you know. So I took it upon myself and, you know...
So you guys were one of the first bands that he worked with,
yeah, uh-huh.
Right?
Oh,
outside
yeah.
of his own stuff.
Oh, yeah, because he was the drummer.
Because he's gone on to be...
You know, well, he was the drummer of Podunk, so obviously right. That's why that record sounded good, because he was like, he did it, you know? But Yeah, so, and then after that, I took him to Dirty Worms, and he did the Dirty Worms album. That got a lot of success with that single of theirs that had all that stuff. But, yeah, Dwight's gone on to do really well. I mean, so.
Did you find that with these albums, and once you started putting them out yourself, that in a on a financial level, that you were coming, like, you weren't spending so much on the front end like a label was before.
It was insane.
That you were actually coming back into the black and making money.
Dude, it's crazy. I mean, we made Into the New, the Sony album, for, we costed, I want to say, $300,000+ to make that record. I mean, you know, you did it with your, yeah. I mean, I don't know how much you spent on your record with
Well, after
ours.
The whole thing was said and done, it was like $750,000.
Yeah.
It was like, what the fuck?
That's exactly,
I don't even know
that's
what
about
that
what
is.
Ours was, yes.
We like, paid, where the hell did we spend that?
Yeah, and then like, we made Stereo for $20,000. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
And then this new album, which obviously we've done. I mean, time is, to measure that, you know, that's probably worth a lot, but basically, financially, it costs us nothing. I mean, because we did it ourselves, you know?
Right.
So, but even $20,000 for Stereo is awesome. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
And you can stack that up to any of those
any
records,
of the other records,
and they
yeah.
sound way better.
Right.
You know? So, I don't know. I think with desktop technology, the way it is, anybody can have Pro Tools and stuff like that. If you pay attention to stuff and you got a good ear and a good knack for using good gear, and I don't see why anybody could not make a good recording, you know. So,
right.
That's one of those things that modern technology is kind of given to back to the musician that, you know, that a lot of stuff hasn't, you know. So,
yeah,
that's a cool thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And so then you guys also started getting songs placed in on TV shows. I remember I saw the one with True Blood, but then also ABC's The Unusual, WB's Roswell, MTV's Road Rules, UPN's America's Next Top Model. And then you were also telling me at one point, I went over to visit you, you were telling me about doing songs for like ESPN and stuff like that, or getting music into
that.
Kind of do that stuff through your company.
Yeah,
Does Alex handle that, or?
Well, no, we have actually a team up, and they're based out of Wisconsin, and they do it. They help us a lot, and but it's all Alex does. Definitely, you know, we all try to drive a lot of that stuff, but it's basically just placement in, you know, sports, all the highlight stuff and all that. I mean, there's money there. I mean,
yeah,
the new money, the new video, which was used to be MTV and all that. The new video is song placement in shows, and you know, MTV, all those, they don't play, they only do reality, but you can get your song on their show, which get huge ratings. I mean, we got a song on Jersey Shore, like, I mean, that's, we got more plays because that show's syndicated all over the world.
So do people like, okay, Jersey Shore, like they come back, like, the next day or a couple of days after it airs, you kind of see something, some kind of spike in sales and plays
absolutely.
And stuff.
Oh yeah, because the cool thing, I think what's cool that they do, the MTVs and all that, now they put the song under the, you know, so it's not like just somebody's just second guessing what is that.
Right.
Or, they put the song and the title and the band under the, you know, while it's playing under the
that's
screen.
Cool.
And I think that's really cool. I think that's kind of their way of like, hey, we're still about music.
Yeah.
Like, right. So definite spike and stuff. The True Blood was definitely a huge...
it was Snake in the Grass. I didn't expect that, but when
me
it started,
neither. Like,
I was just like, whoa.
Yeah, it was kind of, yeah. Well, Snake in the Grass is not even one of our strongest songs, but it's because of True Blood, it is our Vallejo's most downloaded
song. Do you
song.
Know how that went? Did those people shop it to them, or did the music director know that song specifically to
no,
play for?
Because
it worked with the show.
Well, actually, funny story, TVT, Orchard, I don't know if you're familiar with Orchard, they're a big company out of New York, but what they've done is basically they've taken all the little indie labels that folded, which is TVT's one of them.
Right,
and
right.
So they buy up all these, they buy the catalogs up to all these little indie labels, and then they all of a sudden they have this huge catalog of music.
Oh, right. They,
I mean, they've bought up hundreds of indies like TVT, and they buy these, when they buy that label, they take the masters and everything. So they hire these huge teams to like catalog all this stuff.
Yeah. And then they
because they don't, you know, they don't have to pay, they'd rather pay a band like Vallejo $12,000 or something or whatever, you know, to get on some show like that.
Then
pay Beyonce, you know, I want $5 million. You know,
right.
You know, it's like they don't, so, and they do that all day long. So, it's just funny how the guy was like, he called me, he's like, yeah, man, it's just like Redneck Vampire Show on HBO. I mean, it's probably, you know, it sounds kind of dumb to me, but like, you know, if it hits, then good for you guys. If it doesn't, you know, make you guys make a few grand. And,
like, do you make money off of like DVD sales and stuff like that, or do you?
Not the DVD sales, but definitely the any kind of syndication of any kind. You know, obviously.
So every time it plays on HBO,
yeah, which that is, episode. And that's around the world, yeah. So
yeah,
and the cool thing is it plays at the end and then it plays at the beginning of
the next
the
one.
Next the next one. So we got two there. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. So that's I just remember like I didn't really watch. I don't watch Jersey Shore or any of that stuff. So like,
really?
Yeah, no, really. I'm joking. Really. But what do you call it? My phone will just when that stuff happens. Like my phone,
right?
It's like I'll be taking a nap and I'll like literally like there'll be like literally like 80 texts. You know, oh my God, you're on. You know, so right. It's obvious that there's a lot of impact going on. So
I had a taste of this weekend, and I'm sorry to interject my own self into this podcast. And my experiences. But you know this song from my last album? It has an ending. It's All Right, We Love You, Whitney Houston.
Oh, yeah. Huh?
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, huh?
I got 47 text messages Saturday night.
Wow.
I'm not joking. And most of them just said, it's All Right, We Love You, Whitney Houston.
I think my girl said that she heard that or something. Did they play it on some kind of like on E or something or no?
I don't know.
I think they played it on...
I don't even know.
And the reason I say that is because that's the stuff she watches. Like,
well, because I was watching the Grammys thinking that someone was going to bust out and start singing it. I thought Stevie Wonder was actually going to sing it because he was so emotional at that thing.
Oh, that would be so awesome.
But yeah, that's a weird, like, yeah, in this modern time, you find out immediately when something
immediately,
like that happens.
I mean, or like the Whitney Houston thing where immediately when somebody dies now, yeah. You can find out the details, everything. I mean, the dirt is just... information so accessible now.
Speaking of which, how much of Vallejo exists on the web? Like, are you guys very
very as far as
web savvy,
very I mean,
and active.
Our whole catalog, there's obviously still some stuff we're trying to iron out with the Sony catalog, because Sony bought
the TVT
stuff.
Okay,
but so those are the only records that we don't own, but everything else, you know, we're talking about, you know, six, seven albums we own. They're all, you know, available online and stuff like that. So,
right.
I just think it's just cool. I mean, I wish there was a way, and I think that'll come soon down the road. But to get better distribution and all that, which I don't think that it's going to really matter 5 years from now, because just, you know, I think the CD as we know it's probably
it's
on its way out. Yeah. So really, it's going to just be about how real estate on the internet. How can you get your stuff promoted on the internet? So
there's also this other thing that I've noticed, that I've seen. I saw Bob Schneider was doing it, and this guy Charlie Mars was doing one, and it's actually a website where you have concerts, web concerts.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
And people buy tickets.
Yeah,
but you don't have to leave your house.
Yeah, I've seen that.
That's pretty kick-ass.
Yeah, I think that's cool, but I mean, where's the guarantee that it's gonna sound good? What if it sounds like shit? Like, then you're screwed.
It'd be funny if it was just you, like, in your house, and you were fucking climbing shit and like
on the roof. Yeah, I'm gonna jump. My neighbor Jim Kelly catches me.
Vallejo has a DVD out called Vallejo: The Never Ending Tour. In a roller coaster and cutthroat music business that devours bands by the thousands yearly, Vallejo marches on fearlessly, going on 20 years and counting, with 10 albums and over 4,000 shows under their well-worn leather belts. This video is a compilation that you put together of, you even call it a rockumentary. I love that.
Yeah.
You guys always had a good amount of video footage, and I remember going to your house and getting all fucked up, and like you guys would start busting out, saying, "Watch AJ fly off the," you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we'd watch shit like, we'd watch your videos and stuff, and I'm so glad that you put this together. It's incredibly. I've watched it twice.
Yeah, and there's a lot more where that came from, right. Which, you know, I mean,
right?
Like we talked about the other night, and there's a lot of stuff that I had to decide what kind of rating I wanted it to be, because I mean, there's some stuff that, right. You know, there's some really funny.
I'm sure you guys have a shitload of girls showing their boobs.
A lot of that. There's like stuff that's like, you know, two girls, one cup kind of stuff, which is like, I mean, just really, there's some really,
I don't
bad
even
stuff.
Know what that means, and I'm not gonna ask, but
okay,
go ahead.
Okay, yeah, don't ask. there's just some really wild stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That I think is really just, I think it's just better for just for us to
maybe
see. Yeah,
yeah.
You know,
just for your friends.
And
like,
the same
you don't
time,
want to freak anyone out.
Yeah, and plus just we carry the last name, the band, the family,
yeah, the family name.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
We don't need that stuff. I'm sure our aunts and uncles are like, "Mijo, let's watch the new Vallejo DVD with their kids and stuff." Like, can't have, you know.
No.
Yeah.
Two girls, one cup.
Yeah, I mean, Diego's butt's in there, so I mean, I think that's bad enough.
Yeah, that's frightening as it goes. Everything is available on ValejoMusic.com.
Absolutely.
V-A-L-L-E-J-O music.com.
Yep.
Vallejo Music.
I mean, everything. I mean, and then obviously we got the new album coming out, Brothers Brew, and we're just that.
And you guys are playing shows. Do you have any shows this week, this month?
We're playing in Houston. Playing in Houston Saturday, and obviously with South By is coming up, so we'll be there for South By. But just go to the website and
you guys are playing Rockfest. I saw that on
the Rockfest website. Is great. I love that. I love doing that. But yeah, I mean,
like, brewer.
Yeah.
Dude.
I know people don't go to websites anymore.
I need to get
anymore.
Him on my podcast.
Yeah. Hey man. Sorry. No, I believe me. I love that guy. But yeah, I mean, I know people check only their Facebook and their emails and don't go to websites anymore, but if you can stray away from that, like, there is the website.
Yeah, there's good content.
Yeah, there's great content, and you know, it's funny cuz like we have this huge, awesome, informative, like, Vallejo Music website that's been there for 20 years, and, like, I still get, like, there's probably one right now on my Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
When y'all playing again?
Yeah.
Hey, how do I get your CDs?
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
Oh, are you kidding me? Like, you know.
Yeah.
Google. Sometimes you can do that on Google. You can find it on Google. Like, yeah. Amazon. I mean.
You can Google.
Yeah, it's like, whatever. But, yeah, so Vallejo Music, that's just where, like any other band, that's where you can find and find everything. So,
right. Well, have we covered everything? I mean, I think you're a dad now.
I'm a dad. Got an awesome little boy. So,
you had a heart attack.
Yeah.
When I had Will Sexton on here, we talked about his stroke.
Yeah.
And then I played Billy
Squires, though, right?
The stroke.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's fine. He's like you. He's like, you know.
Man, I mean, the heart attack thing is just, I think that was.
I mean, that's weird,
blessing.
Right?
It's a blessing. I mean,
yeah, but you were young. How old were you when that?
37, something like that. 36, 37. I'm going to say 37.
And what did they do? What did they, like, hey, stop?
I don't know. I mean,
throwing yourself off of embankments?
No, just, I mean, some of it was genetics, but I think I was always just, and I did it to myself.
Bad diet
and stress. I stressed myself out.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I have a horrible, like, selection. I mean, I had bad chick selection. I mean, my girlfriends were. They were not good relationships.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? Like, now I got a great. I think a lot of it I imposed on myself. I mean, the drugs. I mean, stuff like that.
Yeah,
man. I mean, I think it's a blessing because it just made me just feel like almost I have like a second life. And it sounds really gay and cliche, but
no,
it really is. I mean,
yeah.
You got me, and now I got this kid. There was a reason that I didn't go because like now I got this son and now I see everything.
I'm glad
clearly.
You didn't go. That's
me too. And you know, this huge appreciation for music and. Life and
your own life.
Yeah, my own life, and I'm taking care of it, and I want to be healthy enough to be around for my kid. You know, it's like, you know, just that. There's and then just the way you see music too, like, and then there's no compromising to make crappy stuff anymore. There's no excuse to make crap. I mean, whether it's with my son or music or you know, or start shit. I mean, it's just not. This is not any time for any of that. You know.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna say a couple things before we go. One of them is, I always wanted to publicly thank you for teaching me how to play guitar, and you would come to my house and you'd let me solo. When I quit Mr. Rockabay or when Mr. Rockabay be disbanded and I started a trio, you and Billy White, who's also been on this podcast, were both really encouraging and wanted me to be the guitar player in the band. And you went so far as to come over to my house. All the time.
Yeah.
And just play chords while I soloed and kind of give me tips and like, hey, try and do this.
Yeah.
And then you were always so encouraging. I remember a couple of times I was playing there and I'd be playing a solo and my eyes would be closed and I would hear like this, yeah! And you'd be standing like right in front like, yeah! And so, anyway, I've always wanted to thank you for that.
Awesome.
Our times that we wrote all those songs were always really fun.
I just would always remember when we would play on stage at Steamboat, you would take a solo and I'd be like, and you were, I mean, you'd be like choking this note and like just giving it hell, like everything you got. And I'd be like, dude, that's so fucking awesome, but it's just the wrong note. If that was the right note, it would be like freaking Jimi Hendrix, dude. Like, because I mean, you played it with such passion. Like, it was like, if like you were about to die. Like, this is the last note I'm ever gonna play in my life. But I just wanted to take your finger and just move it up one fret.
Right.
Like, so I was like, man, if I could just show him just to play like in that little box. Then
you did.
And because, man, you got heart and feel. So, yeah. I mean, so once you figured that out, like.
Well, I've always appreciated that.
Yeah, well, cool, man. I'm glad.
So the other thing that I wanted to say was I had this thought this morning of our gig that we played when we painted our faces.
Oh, God.
And we had this band one night on Halloween called The Velvet Machine, which was the name of a band my friend Mark Hallman had when he was in high school. But I loved the name. So we painted our faces and played. We had names.
I was Gaytobin, and I dressed up like kind of a bad prince or something.
Anyway, that was a really fun night. We were like crazy on mushrooms, and you couldn't unload your shit off the stage because you were lying down.
Yeah,
then.
I couldn't stand up. I was just laying down, and Danny thought we were on some. Yeah,
yeah.
Danny thought we were like on some like some other bad stuff.
You know what happened? Remember that night? There was one night we just had coffee. We had these incredibly strong coffees that were like chocolate.
From
Whole
Foods.
We were on speed. Yeah, we even got them at Whole Foods.
Actually, we were doing Coke or speed. Yeah. And you were like, man, because you were like, man, I don't really feel good. My heart's beating real fast. And I was like,
that was
yeah,
real.
Mine too.
I mean, it was like super sugary, and like we got extra espresso.
Yeah. And we got them at Whole Foods, and we were just really just, man, I was so wired. I think after that, I stopped drinking coffee. I haven't drank coffee. I don't think since then.
Wow.
I mean, that really screwed me up.
I went home and it was bad.
I had anxiety.
That was
a
weird coffee.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all. That was bad.
I love you. I'm glad that you were able to come down and sit down and have
this
conversation.
Awesome,
I hope people enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You and your brothers are great guys, and your whole band is always
Well, dude, we're 20 years in, but we're, I would say, either the halfway mark or just now getting started, because we got a lot. We got a long way to go.
Yeah, we sure do.
Yeah.
Well, man, I love you, AJ. Thanks
love
for
you,
coming,
man.
And everybody, look out for Brothers Brew.
Awesome. Crazy how the
pictures fade and float away. All right, that song is called With Every Day. It's a song AJ wrote for his son, Rocco. More world premiere Vallejo music. So thank you so much to Vallejo for letting me do that. And special thank you to AJ for coming down and talking. It's nice getting to sit down and reminisce with him. He's always been an incredibly nice person. I'm glad that we've been seeing each other a little bit more this year than in years past. Thank you for listening to the show. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can listen to us on Stitcher.com. Thank you so much, everyone. I'm not feeling well, so I'm gonna send you off with one more new Vallejo song called A Million Reasons. This is from their album Brothers Keeper that's coming out in April. Thank you for listening. Take care, and I love you.
Man, I can't describe what I've been feeling lately. Been working for a while and life's been hard. But now it's been too long since I have seen my baby. Leaving her all alone, this can't be good. That's why it's easy to see. I'm going crazy. I got a million things running through my head. Maybe it's because I've been being lazy. When I should have been with you, I was lying instead. That's why it's easy to see. Over now.
got news for her. She ain't getting rid of me for a million reasons, but it only takes three. And I would die if I lost my best friend. I can give her anything any other man can bring, but most of all, I can love her till I die. Yeah. Then I think, well, maybe she don't want me to run away when we're old and lonely, and hopefully I can change her mind. And I know, and I know, she probably wanted more of me in her life. And I can be that if I only try. Everything she wants in me, I can be. I can be. See, I've got news for her. She ain't getting rid of me for a million reasons, but it only takes three. And I would die if I lost my best friend.